You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the app and join me on Wednesdays to get in on the action. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. So the Mets lost again on Wednesday night. Jacob DeGrom pitched another gem, and the Mets offense once again did not show up. I'm going to talk about this frustrating game in the first segment. Then, because it is Throwback Thursday, we are once again joined by Brian Wright. I'm going to play the remainder of my most recent conversation with Brian as we go through his book, Mets in Tens, and talk about some of the first players that played for this organization back in the early 1960s. So that's going to be in segments 2 and 3 today. Before we get to any of that though, I'm your host Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. So when it comes to analyzing this game on Wednesday, there's almost nothing to say or no analysis that needs to be heard, because we've seen this play out time and again, and it continues to be a frustrating experience to watch the Mets not hit for Jacob DeGrom. And I understand that these are professional hitters going against professional pitchers, and it could be as simple as the Boston Red Sox had a great two-day series when it came to their pitching. Garrett Richards was dialed in, and Nick Pivetta was dialed in. But to me, what we're watching right now, it comes down to approach. It's not all about bat speed or, you know, the way that your fundamentals are as far as how your toe tap is lined up and synced up with the rhythm of your swing. All of that stuff matters when it comes to getting into a groove and a rhythm, to be at the plate, to feel comfortable with your swing, to be locked in. All that's important, but at the same time, what goes on in between the ears is important too. And baseball is a chess game. You are playing against a pitcher, and you got to find out their tendencies before you get in the box right now. This isn't the old school days where you can just do no homework, get in there, see the ball, hit the ball. These pitchers are ridiculously elite. Nick Pivetta, who is not even considered one of the better starters in baseball, although he's one of the better starters in the Red Sox rotation right now, he was averaging like 97 miles per hour on his fastball. I mean, he still has good stuff, even though he's not regarded as this great pitcher, because he has trouble at times executing through a lineup three times through, and that's why the Red Sox ultimately got him out of this game early after pitching just five innings. But it comes down to putting yourself in a position to succeed. So when you're chasing bad pitches out of the zone, you're getting yourself in the hole in these counts, and you look up and you're sitting 1-2, now you got to protect against these pitchers who still have nasty hooks. They have all these new pitchers that they've engineered in driveline facilities that cut and they move in and out. It is very hard to hit. It is. And so I have sympathy for the Mets right now who are just trying to figure it out. But it comes down to some focus and an approach where you can put yourself in a position where you're in a 3-1 count and you can just kind of sit on a fastball and maybe do some damage. That's what the Mets have to iron out. Because what we're seeing right now is just a lot of bad at-bats. This isn't the Mets, you know, just running into some bad luck, hitting the ball in places where, you know, the hits aren't falling, and they're just kind of in this bad place where they're just not getting lucky. In a two-game series, they struck out 28 times against the Red Sox. Didn't walk once in the first game. They did draw four walks tonight, but they only had two hits. So what is that? That's six base runners tonight. They had seven hits in game one. 13 base runners in two games. They only produce a single run in two games against the Red Sox. The Red Sox might be a great team this year. Their record certainly suggests that they have the potential to be a very good team. But the Red Sox are built around a great offense. And you limited them to, what was it, three runs in two games? The pitching did its job. You can't lose to the Red Sox when you are able to keep that lineup at bay and you can't scratch in a couple of runs to win one of these two games. I know the Mets are frustrated, and I hate to be the guy piling on. But up to this point, I've been preaching patience. I've been saying, look, they'll figure it out. I haven't been calling for any sweeping changes or talking about Chili Davis or anything like that. But now we're sitting here, and this lineup is holding the team back. This is an elite pitching staff right now. Jacob DeGrom is Jacob DeGrom. He's incredible. Average 99 again on his fastball. Topped out at 101 at 101 multiple times. Has 59 strikeouts through five starts, which tied Nolan Ryan for the most ever through five starts in a big league season. His last start, he had broken Ryan's record for most strikeouts through four starts. Looks like he could be competing with Ryan all year on trying to have maybe the most strikeouts ever in a season, which I believe the record's at 381. Don't know if DeGrom will get all the way up there. That is a tall task, but he is at the top of his craft. Gave up one run tonight, and his ERA went up because that's how good he has been this year. And all you got to do is give him a little bit of support. And so if you have to be a grit and grind team and scratch together some runs, you got to figure that out. If you're supposed to play to your identity, get yourself into some comfortable counts where you can really just swing away and drive the ball out of the ballpark. That's what this lineup is constructed to do. But we haven't seen Dominic Smith get the power stroke. We haven't seen Michael Conforto get a real power stroke. Francisco Lindor hasn't. Really, the only one hitting home runs is Pete Alonso. And Jeff McNeil has a couple, which for him is probably on pace with where he should be, but he has to be getting on base a lot more. So you look at what this game was. It was, once again, the same story, different day. The Mets pitched great. Should shout out the bullpen real quick. Aaron Loop gave up a hit but erased it on a double play and got a strikeout. So he retired the side in order in his inning. Trevor May struck out the side in his inning. And Edwin Diaz pitched a perfect ninth with two strikeouts. They all did their job. At a certain point, as much as I already said, I've been preaching patience. You can't be patient for that much longer. The Mets need to have a hard look in the mirror, and they got to figure something out because they just aren't going to win games this way. And because this has been so frustrating, I think we can all agree that it's going to be good to take a trip back in time and talk about some old Mets for Throwback Thursday. In a minute, we're going to play my conversation with Brian Wright as we discuss his book Mets in Tens and the early beginnings of this franchise. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Locker Room is the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download, and once you're in, you can talk with me, other fans, athletes, and insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. I will be hosting rooms for Locked On Mets once a week on Wednesdays, so you can finally join in on the conversation you listen to here every day. Go download the free Locker Room app now, which is currently available on all iOS devices, and it's also available in beta form for the Android. Be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, join the MLB group for the latest league updates, and follow me at Finkelstein Ryan to be notified when my room goes live. I know you don't want to miss it. Again, I plan to be live on Wednesdays around game time. I can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts on the Mets. I will see you there. Locker Room, changing the way we talk sports. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you can use for other important things, like your mortgage or food. So why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, maybe even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership when you can use rockauto.com, a family business that has been serving auto parts to customers online for 20 years. They have everything you could want, from engine control modules to brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and then choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and make sure you write Locked On in there. How'd you hear about us, Box? So they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. And you had Jack Fisher. That was a new name for me. Had not heard of him before. He led the league in earned runs allowed 3 times as a Met and losses twice. But you look at the numbers, and he really wasn't quite as bad as that might have indicated. What was Fisher's time like with the Mets?
So Jack Fisher is known for a couple things. He's known for giving up Ted Williams' final home run in Ted Williams' final at bat as a Baltimore Oriole in 1960. And then he became known for throwing the first pitch, literally the first pitch on the field at Shea Stadium when Shea opened in April of 1964. 8-24 record in 1965. But he had a 3.94 ERA and an ERA under 4, not only that year, but the next. He actually lowered his ERA to 3.68. So in totality, he wasn't all, you know, he was keeping his team in the game in a sense. But as we talked about with all these players and pitchers, sometimes you just don't get the run support, or you're just left pitching against a stacked deck. And that was the case for Fisher, especially in those 3 seasons, four seasons he was with the Mets.
It just seems like a lot of these guys have similar stories. Carl Wiley was another one who had a great first year with the Mets, 3.01 ERA, 101 strikeouts. But he actually had injuries, correct, that kind of stopped what might have been a more promising Mets career.
I know I put this in the book that he got a severe injury.
It was like a liner that he got hit. Elbow tendonitis after that too.
That's right. Yeah. It went off his jaw and he still wound up pitching in 1964. And I think he only pitched about 28 innings in 1965 and then had to retire. I don't know if he hit a grand slam home run as a Met. I'm trying to remember if Carl Lilly did that, now that I think about trying to remember his career. But he was he had like 5 decent seasons with the Braves. You know, he could have improved on that. He is the case, unlike Fisher, unlike, as we're going to maybe talk about, Roger Craig and Al Jackson. That was what was his downfall. It wasn't that the team let him down. It was just that his body let him down.
Yeah. And that's exactly where I wanted to go next. You have Roger Craig and Al Jackson. And I think Al kind of gets remembered a little bit more just because of being a longtime coach at the organization.
Maybe it's not in that section, the early Met section, but in the left-hander section, about how much he influenced Ron Darling and how Ron Darling revered him when he was coming up. So yeah, Al Jackson was, his impact was felt not just through his playing career, but afterwards. I mean, he influenced a lot of the pitchers later on. But he was a small guy that, you know, Bob Murphy called him Little Al Jackson. He was from Texas. Now, he was a very resilient pitcher. Same goes for Roger Craig. And Roger Craig set a Mets record at the time with 18, or the National League record of 18 consecutive losses. And that was in 1963. And, you know, I think his quote, I think I wrote this, is that you still have to be a pretty good pitcher to lose this often, because who is going to just keep throwing you out there? You're not going to be thrown out there if you're no good. You're eventually going to be, you know, put to the bullpen or something like that. Even in the 60s, when pitchers were kind of had a bit of a longer leash and they were out there for a lot longer and had more influence on the game, on the result, I should say, of their result. So both of them were felled by their own teams. Craig, I know, went to the Cardinals in 1964, and that was the year in which the Cardinals won the World Series, and he pitched in game 4 and got the win. So he wound up, you know, showing that he could be not only a pitcher, he could stay a good pitcher, but also be a pitcher on a winning team.
It is such a different era of baseball where, you know, the wins and losses really weighed on a starting pitcher a lot more than they do today. And just to imagine having to go through 18 consecutive losses where you're probably throwing some good games in there and there's just no offense. I think as much as Jacob deGrom has gone through it, I don't know if he's quite gone through it the way that Roger Craig did.
Yeah, I have to look at I'd have to look at that game log from May 4th to August 4th, and to see like how. I'm actually looking at what I wrote down, and it said like I said he had several quality outings. I don't know what several is, but I have to re-research. But yeah, so he had to have had good outings out there during that time, and just he couldn't catch a break. It wasn't Jacob deGrom quality, but it was still. He still should have merited a few victories in that time.
So now I want to talk about Egg Cranepool. And for me, being someone who listens to some sports talk radio, now Egg Cranepool is synonymous with Don LaGreca. I don't know if you ever heard that rant.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, about how Egg Cranepool was the Mets legend you had to look back on compared to the Yankees. But Egg Cranepool did have a great Mets career. Was it 18 seasons? With the team. So Egg Cranepool might not have been the greatest of players, but certainly a great Met.
Yeah. He came up, is a local, came up at a high school in 1962, only played three games, but was a 17-year-old up with the Mets in their initial season, and actually was an all-star in 1965 as a 20-year-old, a year in which he hit 253. But he was their representative that year and wound up hitting 16 home runs the next season. But his real contributions to the Mets were later in his career. He was an outstanding pinch hitter, really persevered. I mean, he was there obviously in 69 and 73, got sent down to the minors, came back up, and as I said, made a name for himself as a pinch hitter. At no fault of his, he winds up, as the Mets hit, leader. He was the Mets, all-time game leader for a long time until David Wright comes in and passes him, especially in the hit category. Because Egg Cranepool had the hit record, that was more of a, as Don LaGreca pointed out, that was more of a mark against the Mets in terms of developing everyday players. That shouldn't be anything against Egg Cranepool by the fact that maybe it should have been, the Mets should have had players that stayed longer and wound up accumulating more hits. It just wound up that Egg Cranepool was around for 18 seasons and was able to accumulate that. That being said, he's a wonderful representative for the Mets, has been since the beginning. He literally has been somewhat of a representative. I know he tried to get ownership of the team. I think it was like in 2011 or so, tried to get some stake in ownership in the team, and the Wilpons didn't allow it, which was ridiculous. I think that would have been a great move. But in any event, Egg Cranepool is definitely one of the long time and long standing faces of the franchise and should remember it as such.
Yeah, I think even if you hold a job for 18 years, no matter what industry, you got to be doing something right. So the fact that he was able to stick with this one team for that long, spent his entire career with one organization, I don't think we should be giving him grief for his accomplishments like LaGreca did, but certainly a great all-time Met.
Yeah, sometimes it's in an instance like that when you're trying to make a point and saying, look, the Mets, we couldn't keep Darryl Strawberry. We couldn't keep Jose Reyes. Couldn't keep another hitter, whoever you want to name. And then the name Egg Cranepool comes up is like, that's your longstanding everyday player or non-pitcher. It's unfortunate that his name comes up because they don't want to disparage him because he doesn't deserve that.
He doesn't. Not everyone's going to be the Yankees who have a longer history and had a million Hall of Famers. So you got to take what you can get as a Mets fan. We will have more of that conversation with Brian Wright in just a minute, but BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Whether it's the NBA, the NHL, or Major League Baseball, BetOnline has you covered. They even have awards, TV shows, and reality TV with real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered. For all the new scores and odds, it's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. This episode is brought to you by 1010, a capsule collection of diamond rings that are responsibly sourced limited edition designs at fair price points. Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 female design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful ring. Ideal for engagement, Mother's Day, or simply a beautiful conversation piece, they're the perfect way to bring light into her life, and they're available now through Mother's Day only at BlueNile.com. Just search the words 10x10. If you're on the hunt for the perfect unique ring she'll treasure forever, you're definitely going to want to check this out. They won't be around for long, so find them now by searching the words 10x10 only at BlueNile.com.
Charlie Smith, that was another new name for me. A slugger who hit a lot of home runs and struck out a lot. Seems like we've seen that story play out a lot of times over the next half century here.
You know, a lot of players today, because he struck out, I think he had like an average of like 112 strikeouts. A lot of players that would kill for 112 strikeouts a year, don't you think? Yeah. So yeah. There were a lot of hitters that would do that in the first half of the season.
Look at Javi Baez.
Yeah, he's striking out. Yeah, he is. He's really stupid. With the game we were watching yesterday, he was swinging at everything. But yeah, he traveled around. Charlie Smith traveled around a lot before he wound up in New York, wound up with the Mets. He only was there for two seasons, from 64, I think, through 65, if I'm not mistaken, maybe into 66. But he was a decent home run hitter. I mean, he had 20 home runs in 1964 and 16 in 1965. So he was a guy that at the time he struck out. He was a high strikeout rate, and that was kind of what brought his batting average a little bit down.
Yeah, and then the other guys you talk about when it comes to some of these hitters that were part of the Mets early on, it does seem like this is always a franchise where pitching is kind of talked about more. But Jim Hickman, and the Mets had a Frank Thomas too, which I did not know. So what about those two guys kind of stood out?
Well, Jim Hickman was the first to hit for the cycle as a Met, and he did that in 1963. He was also the first to hit three home runs in a game. He did that in 1965. Both of them were against the Cardinals, I believe. I remember him for kind of initiating both of those kind of banner hitting games. And then Frank Thomas was really the first slugger in Mets history in the 1962 season. Hit 34 home runs, which a lot of people forget. I think a lot of people just remember the 40 wins and 120 losses. But 34 home runs in 1962 was pretty good. I know that, 61 home runs would set the record set that year before, but it was still a pretty good output. And that was a record that stood until Dave Kingman broke it. But Frank Thomas was with the Mets until 1964, until he was traded to the Phillies. I remember speaking to Frank Thomas. He's still, I think he's 90 years old. I spoke to him a couple of years ago for this book. And he was pretty adamant that the team was better than their 40 and 120 record. It's hard to be any worse, but he was pretty adamant that they were in a lot of games and it just, games just slipped by, which I know is standard for a lot of teams, a lot of unfortunately bad teams. I think it was more of a feeling of like the confidence level. When you have a 40-win season, you're just thinking like, all right, how are we going to lose this one today? How is this one going to get away? And oftentimes it did, but Frank was adamant that the team was a lot better than the record indicated.
It is truly hard to lose that many games. you should be a little bit better than your record when your record's that bad. But mm-hmm. I also, as a fellow writer, I appreciate the way you worked Big Hurt into that little passage about Frank Thomas. He was putting Big Hurt on baseballs. I did like that a lot. So,
yeah, now everyone remembers, obviously, the Hall of Famer, the White Sox, Frank Thomas. But there was definitely one before that. I wish I would ask them, have they met? Has original Frank Thomas and White Sox Frank Thomas ever met? I'm interested. I never got to ask him that.
Yeah, it's definitely something that would be interesting to see if the two Thomases got into a room and talked about how they used to crush baseballs. Ron Hunt, the first Met to start an All-Star game. Also, you said he got hit by a lot of pitches, was a fan favorite. I did know of Ron Hunt, unlike some of these other guys. What about Ron Hunt stands out in those first days as a Met?
Well, yeah, so that first All-Star start was fittingly at the All-Star game at Shea Stadium in 1964. And he wound up also being an All-Star in 1966. So he was the Mets' first two-time All-Star. And 66 was his last year in New York. He got hit by, as you said, hit by a lot of pitches. But with the Mets, he didn't get hit as frequently. It was really after he left the Mets, went on to the Giants, had a brief term with the Dodgers, but he was mainly with the Giants and the Expos at the end of his career. And this stat just boggles the mind because in 19, and I'm looking at it right now, 1971 with the Expos, he got hit by 50 pitches. You think Brandon Nimmo gets hit by a lot of pitches, or you think Michael Conforto's gotten hit by a lot, or Jeff McNeil got hit by 3 pitches in a spring training game. Ron Hunt got hit by 50 pitches in a season, which is staggering. And I know that Craig Biggio has the record, but that I'm going to safely assume that's the single season record, modern era. But that's crazy. And he led the league, by the way, in hit by pitches. I'm looking at Baseball Reference page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 straight years. I don't know how he did it. I would love to know, and I know there's an interview with him. How did he get hit by so many pitches? What was there a skill to it? I'm not sure. That being said, he was for his career would hit 273. For his Mets career, hit 282. So he was a guy who could at least definitely get on base. He's renowned for the hit by pitches, but he still was a good second baseman, a good hitter, hit over 300 in that 64 All-Star season, and was and also should be pointed out was runner up for Rookie of the Year in 1963. So he nearly had snagged that award too.
Now, how many years did he play after getting hit by the 50 some odd pitches?
Say 1, 2, 3, 4 seasons. He played until
Wow.
1974.
I thought that after you get hit by that many pitches, you just hang them up and say, you know what, this just isn't for me. I'm in my 30s. I'm getting drilled every night.
Ron, yeah. Well, from what I've seen, I never talked to Ron Hunt, but from everything I've seen it, he was a tough. I mean, you have to be a tough guy, and he was, and definitely irascible and good natured, but a tough guy. So he definitely he de they say taking one for the team. Well, he took a lot for the team.
Well, we'll kind of end here. Talking about all these guys and the makeup of a team that loses so much, but was able to still capture an imagination of a fan base. And ultimately, I guess none of it happens if not for 69. But you would think that there had to be some groundwork laid there where, because of the personalities of some of these guys, there was a fan base to celebrate that first championship.
Yeah, so I mean, a lot of there are so many great stories from the '62 team. A lot of has to do with their terrible play, but there's also a lot of good players and good personalities that drew fans to the stadium. Like I mentioned at the start, a lot of National League veterans, like as I said, Gil Hodges, Duke Snyder, Warren Spahn, Richie Ashburn, who were there, brought fans to the stadium. Their bad play brought fans to the stadium and made them a lovable team. But there were these good players that, fans noticed and also were a reason why those fans supported the Mets early on as well, because they were at least players that you could root for and were likable. And the 10 that are in this list all qualify as such. So you're right. It does. It did. There had to be a foundation laid. I think these players endured. And, they thrived in their own way, but they did endure through some very lean years.
That's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. Big shout out and thanks to Brian Wright for joining me once again for a Throwback Thursday. You can follow Brian on Twitter at BrianWright86. Find his books, Mets All-Time All-Stars, and the one we're going through on this podcast, which is Mets in Tens, wherever you get your books. You can also DM Brian to get a signed copy of the books as well. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan and follow the show at Locked On Mets. And if you want to get more of the sports news you need in less time, check out our new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily show breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. I was actually on the show today, so if you want to go find that, you can listen to me talk about Jacob deGrom and his futile existence as the Mets ace. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today, wherever you get your podcasts.